Hey guys, and welcome to Smart Women Read Romance, a book review podcast where we fangirl over all things romance. I'm Jessen.
And I'm Juliet.
Today we'll be reviewing Entreat Me by Grace Draven. But before we dive in, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform and please rate and review us. If you want more romance discussions, follow us on our social media pages at SWReadRom, join our Facebook group, The Swoon Zone, and follow my YouTube channel, Jessen Reads Romance. If you'd like some podcast extras, become a patron of the podcast on Patreon, where we have extra content, including exclusive episodes and give away free enamel pens, stickers, books, and bookmarks. Special shout out to all of our lovely patrons. We love and appreciate the support. All right, Juliet.
Yes.
Let's talk about a project that you've had in the works. Background.
Okay, so this is an author collaborative project. It's called the HEA Collective. And I'm so excited because, of course, I've known about it for a while, but couldn't say anything until we were ready to start talking about it. It is a Patreon with a group of close to 50 authors. I don't know exactly how many of us there are. Lots of us. And for each month, there'll be four new novellas for different tropes. So each month is going to be a different trope, which is super exciting.
I love that.
I know. And as a matter of fact, I am writing a trope I have never written, but which I love and adore. And so do you.
It's so exciting.
I'm so excited, but I can't share what it is.
What a tease.
I know.
What a tease. How dare she do this?
We're kind of keeping things secret right now, but it launches. There is, we do have a website, theheacollective.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter and get more information on the details, but tons of fantastic offers.
Is that link in your link tree?
Yes.
On Instagram?
It is on my link tree on Instagram.
Okay, awesome.
Avery Flynn's in there. One of my besties, Naima Simone, Kilby Blades. There's just so many, tons of great authors in there. So
I'm so excited about this as well, because when she told me she was doing what trope she picked, I was just kind of oh my god, yes.
I know. And I'm writing it right now and it's delicious.
Oh,
that's
god,
all
it's
I can
just
say.
So exciting, because if you've been here for any amount of time, then Juliet and I like to have what we call plot parties. Basically an excuse to have margaritas
and talk about books that I need to write.
About books that Juliet needs to write. It's just kind of like a brainstorming together that we have before Juliet writes a new book, where she has a new series in the works and stuff like that. And I just love, it's honestly one of my favorite parts about the creative process that Juliet has when she's creating new series, new characters, all that jazz.
Yeah, so, it's fun for me too,
I love it. I mean, I get the benefit of knowing about, her projects ahead of time and just kind of seeing how it all develops.
Yeah, so Justin helped me with the plotting for this one.
Oh,
and
so
all I can tell you is their names are Reed and Anna, and I'm so excited because I'm writing it right now and already.
When did you mention do you know the timeline, when yours will be releasing?
Yes, but I can't tell you.
Oh, no!
I know everything. When I can. We'll definitely post. That's really sad. I have this information, but I can't tell you anything.
So basically, everyone go sign up for the newsletter so that you can be notified.
Right. So each month, they're going to tell you what the new trope is and who the authors are.
Oh,
and
so, okay. So it's
sort
all
of
a
surprise.
Secret until the month before.
Right. Right. It's a surprise.
Okay.
So,
well, that's fun. I'm very excited about that. It's kind of
new. And you can go see the list of authors as well on the website. It shows you everybody who's involved. And anyway, it's just super exciting. It's a fun project. I've never done one quite like this, with this large a group of authors. So this will be fun. I'm excited.
I love it. It's just so exciting when you see authors working together. It's oh, I know. And it kind of makes you also try new authors as well.
Right.
If you know a couple of authors that are writing in a group like this, and it I know that I have found a couple of them. They did Mafia one recently called Kings of the Underworld, and there were
an anthology.
Many, not really an anthology. They were just all writing under the
and
banner Kings of the
Underworld. I like that.
And it wasn't super connected either, but it was just kind of all the book covers kind of look very cohesive and stuff. And I knew a couple of the Mafia authors who were writing there, and it made me discover one of the new ones that I discovered through that was Michelle Hurd. Mm-hmm. And Jen was just telling me, I think she got an arc of the newest Michelle Hurd, and she was just kind of this one's so good. So now I got to start that series. So anyway, I just really love stuff like that because it makes
it
you
does get
branch
to introduce
out,
you to new authors that you've never tried
yes,
before.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I really love that. I'm so glad. I'm so excited. Happy that this is now out in the open.
I know.
And I can't wait until you can officially announce what it is. Oh, she's also sent me the book cover for it. And I'm just The other day, she messaged me and she showed me
the picture.
The picture. And I was like, I love it. So,
I can say this will be set in the Beauville world. Mm-hmm. So it will be
connected to your contemporary series.
So it'll be a couple photo, you know, like Bright Like Wildfire. So,
So exciting. I'm so happy. So let's talk about the characters.
Yes. Let's talk about Entreat Me.
So you are actually the one who turned me on to Grace Draven.
Yes, ma'am.
And we've already done Radiance on the podcast. Yes. And I feel like Grace Draven, she's just so great at the Beauty and the Beast type of trope.
I mean, this is right up her alley.
I have not read all of her books, but I'm pretty sure she has another one called Master of Crows that's also kind of a Beauty and the Beast trope as well.
That which cover I haven't read yet. I adore, by the way.
I own it. I mean, like, Grace Draven has some of the most beautiful like fantasy artwork. Covers. Ugh. Like, it's so great. But yeah, so Radiance was a, you know, Beauty and the Beast type of trope, and he was more beastly because they're two different species.
Right.
But in this one, they're not two different species. This is more of a direct, like, tie into Beauty and the Beast. It has lots and lots of references. It's definitely a retelling. So our hero, it opens with a hero named Ballard, and his wife is dying in childbirth, okay? Mm-hmm. And with her last breath, she curses him. And I'm going to talk about the details of the curse, like, in the spoiler section, but I will say that he does know that the child is not his.
Yeah.
Because there is, like, a birthmark that all of his family have.
Yeah. And there's lots, like, of magic in this world,
lots
obviously.
Lots of magic. Yes, exactly. Like, hedge witches and stuff. And he has a sorcerer in his payroll named Ambrose. And when Ambrose finds out that the wife, Isabeau, cursed him, he's like, tell me exactly what she said. And she, like, lifted up her left hand, and he was just like, oh, that's bad news, you know what I'm saying? And so he knows that this baby is not his, but he's just like, no, I'm claiming him as my son. Like,
I love
this is
that.
My son, his name's Gavin. Then all of a sudden we have, like, a 300 plus years later, and I'm just like, whoa, what's happening?
And I was like,
here,
holy
time,
cow,
what a time jump. Okay, so good magic at work. And we meet our heroine, and I'm not exactly sure how you say her name. So we're going to, I'm going to go with Luvan, because that's Luvan. Yeah. But how did you say it? Because I really, you're some more lyrical.
Luvan. I was just saying Luvan.
Yeah. Well, I love her.
Yeah.
She's an older sister. Her father has fallen on hard times. It's like the typical the beauty trope where the father's a merchant. He loses all his fortune, and he has, you know, some daughters, two or three. And her younger sister, Sinea, is so beautiful.
Yes.
She's gorgeous. Well, this local asshole wants to court her so bad.
Yeah.
But she's falling for this guy named Gavin. And Luvan just kind of like, we don't know who he is.
He just,
like,
came through town and stopped and stayed.
Yeah. And he's real beautiful. And she's worried that he's just really fascinated by Sinea's beauty, and there's not going to be, like, a real lasting relationship that comes out of it. So she's trying to protect her sisters while also trying to keep the stupid dude away from her.
Yeah.
Well, the sister decides she's going to take matters into her own hands, because the dad behind their back went into, like, another contract with this dude.
Right.
And
so they're
lost
in severe
all their money.
Debt.
Severe debt. Sinea decides that she's going to go with Gavin because he needs to return home. And she basically runs away from home. And so Luvan has to follow her.
But she leaves behind, like, this enchanted beacon.
It's like, it has, like, a letter written out to her, and she's just like, this
it'll
is
lead
ensorcelled.
You. It'll lead you to his
it'll
castle.
Lead you. Mm-hmm. So she comes immediately to protect her sister's virtue, and she stumbles upon this castle that looks, like, very, like, old world.
Now, that, how do you say that? Ketic Tor?
Yeah, no.
I just would say Ketic Tor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right to me. So anyway, she goes to this castle, and, you know, she meets Ballard, who has, like, these long black claws,
yes.
And he's always, like, walking around hooded and cloaked and
stuff
like that.
Super pale. He has these scars that move on his face.
So he's a little bit beastly, and she's like, what is going on here? Like, what is happening?
This place is a little – and she can sense magic, too.
She can, because her mother was a hedge witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about her background and her kind of, like, why she doesn't like magic and stuff like that when we get to the spoiler section. So, guys, if you have not read Entreat Me, you should definitely pick it up and come back and chat with us. All right, guys, we're in the spoiler section. So, let's talk about the curse that is put on Ballard. So
yes.
Isabeau, this wife, obviously has no love lost for Ballard. And
we should also say, then we get these flashbacks throughout, but just to give you the gist of it.
Yeah.
Isabeau, she was in love with a man named, I think Granthing is his name. He is the neighboring landowner. But she was betrothed. She'd already signed her father had already signed a contract with Ballard. Well, Ballard finds out that she's sleeping with Granthing and she's like trying to run away with him. And he chases them down and demands, no, you signed a contract. You cannot be breach of contract. But it's all about the lands she owns.
Yeah,
they're both fighting over her because they want the lands.
He's not in love with Isabeau.
No.
And his basis for marriage is like his father and mother weren't in love with
very arranged marriage like.
And like they just had Ballard. And then after that, they both took lovers. And like, so that's just like a normal thing. He's like, he's not marrying for love.
Yeah. He's like, she's like, he said, after you give me a son, you can take him as whatever lover. You can have all your freedom. You can even live separately if you want. But you are marrying me so that I can have your land. So he was so determined to do this. And what ended up happening is he had to end up dual granting for the lands and ended up killing him. So
and we find out that Granthing didn't even love Isabeau.
No, he's like, I don't care about her. I just want her lands. So she's basically a very scorned woman. Okay. Yeah. But she blames Ballard for everything. You know, even though this, you know, she's carrying a child that isn't even his. She is the most hateful person.
Yes. And like she's like, literally dying. And with her dying breath, she curses him. She calls him in there. And this is what she says. She says, I leave you with your precious heir. To him I bequeath my bitterness, my rage, my hatred. When he puts childhood behind him, they will manifest. The savage you are shall rise up, the savage he'll become. No woman will love him. All your machinations, your deceit have brought us to this. No woman born will ever love you, and the son will destroy the father. And so that's her parting words before she fucking dies. And I'm just like, holy shit, woman.
And there's those three things that basically have to be broken.
Yeah.
Some woman has to love Gavin.
Yes.
Some woman not born has to fall in love with Ballard. And the father cannot kill. I mean, the son cannot kill the father.
Yes.
So. Yes. But so what happens is as when she gets there, so when she gets to the castle, Louvain.
372 years later.
Yes, 372 years later. Louvain. Yes, I was like, oh, so it's extended their life unnaturally, obviously. They're like almost
Ambrose
in this time.
Ambrose is a sorcerer, and he knew in order to break this curse, because he was just like, this is a real curse. And once it did start manifesting, because, you know, he grew up and I think it didn't start happening until he was like, you know,
until he became, a grown boy.
And whenever he was a boy and he was actually at a neighbor's house, like doing, you know, squire work or whatever. And it started manifesting in him and he's watching his son like struggle and like turn into this beast.
He turned to a beast and like killed two people. Other boys.
And so he's just like, I can't watch my son suffer. And he asked Ambrose to basically direct the curse at himself so he, Ballard, can take it on for his
and
son.
And becomes the beast.
And he becomes, you know, the beast, and he's able to, like, take it and fight it off, like, much more than a boy would be able to, which saves him in the end, like, in the long run. So what Ambrose does is he has these wards around the castle and around the land, and months pass in their land, but years pass in the outside world.
Right.
So they only age a little bit while the world is still spinning because Gavin actually leaves a couple times, which is why he grows to a grown man. He's a grown man, you know, and his father is still, you know, in his like 40s or whatever.
Right.
But Gavin goes out venturing because he's trying to look for a way to break the curse and stuff like that. And like the castle's kind of like, you know, standing still in time when Louvain gets there. They have all like this wool that they have and they're using like antiquated methods to spin it. And she just kind of like, there's a faster way this. And Gavin actually brought like the wheels that like make it go faster, but they don't know how to use it
because they're still like, they're from, you know, hundreds of years earlier. Yeah. They were born.
Yes.
You know?
But let's talk about when Gavin brings Sinéa there initially, it's a little bit hopeful. Like Ambrose is maybe like, oh, well, this girl can love Gavin and maybe right. the curse will be broken. But Ballard's a little bit more cynical and just kind of like, don't get your hopes up. We'll see
right.
if she can love him or whatever. Like true. It has to be true love.
It has to be true love. And the other thing is like, they're like, is it first kiss? Is it first tupping? What is it?
What does it exactly take to break yes. the curse? Like how?
Like they don't even know. They don't even know.
Yeah. To be like, they're in love, so the curse should be broken.
It's officially done.
Right. You know? And I love how Gav is just like, you should expect the sister in a couple of days because she's very tenacious and she's going to want to protect
yeah,
her.
Yeah, Gavin, so Gavin's like, you know, she's going to be coming. Because
the she-wolf yeah. is going to be knocking on the door looking for her sister, but her father is in severe debt and there's this man basically after her wanting to marry her. And he's horrible and I just had to take her away from that. Yeah. And we need to pay his debts. And they're completely able to pay the father's debts or whatever.
Yeah. And when Luvain arrives, yeah. they're in the flux is high, like the tide is high. Basically, they keep saying that this the reason, you know, they suffer all these this trauma basically is because of the flux, the magical flux.
It's like
flux.
A magic wave that right. like hits
but
them.
But it's really
every now
not
and then.
The flux, it's really the curse yes. when the tides come in.
Yes.
And so what's happened is that when she gets there, she hears this horrible screaming from the Lord below. They're like, well, he takes ill when the flux, the magic's high. And
they're like
she's
what's
like,
happening?
She's
oh, he's
like,
just ill?
He sounds like he's dying.
Yeah.
He's screaming in pain and agony. And she just can't. This is, okay, this is this is not a timid lass.
No. And that's what
she
I
does
love
not,
about
she
her.
She does not sit back. Like, it's so funny because you think of Beauty and the Beast, you know. She is, you know, she is beautiful, but she's
she's more striking than she is beautiful.
Right.
Her sister is, like,
classic
gorgeous,
beautiful. Right.
But she's just, like, she has an unforgettable face. That's
right.
what Luvain is.
I love that he always calls her Beauty. But it's really mm-hmm. her personality is so different from, like, what we think of, like, the Disney version.
Yeah. Not, like,
princess.
Timid,
she
not...
is, I'm going to get things done. She's like, this is ridiculous. The Lord and Master of this house is in agony and you're not helping him. I'm
like,
going to go.
I want to see for myself, yes. like, what is
I'm
going on.
I'm
going to
go see and I'll see if I can fix it. Since
and she
can.
Also notices, so it's really funny because like Saneea hasn't noticed anything wrong with Gavin, but Luvain mm-hmm. just kind of like, what's going on with your eyes? Because
your
last
eyes are
time
yellow.
I checked, they were green, and all of a sudden I'm seeing this reflective light in them. They're yellow. Like, tell me what's going on. And so Gavin's yeah. just like, yeah, there's kind of like a curse. And so my dad basically takes it on for me, but now it's yeah. starting to spill over. Like, he's taken on as much as he possibly can. Now it's spilling over into Gavin again.
Yeah.
And we have to keep him chained up. And she's just like, that sounds ridiculous. Like, let me see for myself
right.
what's going on. So he decides to bring her to the, you know, makeshift cell that they've made for him. And he tells her, he's like, do not
like
cross this line.
Yeah, because he can, the chains only go so far.
Yeah, won't be able to reach. Well, when he just kind of like, boy, like, why have you brought her here and stuff like that? She steps forward and she is apologizing. She's like, my Lord, I see that
I'm
you're
sorry.
In agony. And he like whips out and like grabs her foot and like drags her to him. And she's like, she
holy
kicked
shit.
Him in the face.
Breaks his nose.
And breaks his nose. So she's like feisty and stuff. And Gavin's just kind of like, I told you not to cross the line. She's like, well, she's like, it'll be
yeah,
okay.
Ambrose
like,
is furious.
I'm sorry,
like, you
I
didn't
broke
listen.
His nose. And
yeah.
Gavin just kind of like, he's had broken noses before. He'll be fine. He'll be fine eventually. But Ambrose does not like Luvain. I actually end up by really loving their vibe together.
Yes.
They're very contentious with each other.
Oh my gosh, constantly.
Constantly. Ambrose is constantly like throwing shade at her
yes.
and she at him.
She throws
and
it right
I
back.
I love it. I love it because they're kind of like frenemies. Like that's what
yes.
Ambrose and Luvain are. They're kind of like frenemies and I love it. And he always like calls her like the shrew and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just love.
I
just
so
love that.
I do. And I love, so after this moment, she's like, well, you know. You know, she's like, you have to do that. Like, she finds out basically that this was at the end of the flux. Like, this wasn't even, it gets much worse than this. She's
right.
like, because she's like, surely, you know, he could speak, you know, you can't, don't have to chain him. She's like, no, we have to chain him. So she's like, okay, there's something weird, some weird shit going on around here. But then they find out that she has to go back and save her father before Geminin throws him in jail with the debts. She's worried about her father because Geminin has threatened and he wants Saneea as the bride price. He's like, if you give me her as a bride, then basically, you know, all the debts will be paid. And
yeah.
of course, that's not going to happen. But Gavin is like, we can pay. He's like, look, I plead to basically, I want to court your sister. I want to court your sister over winter. I'll pay the debts, you know, that you owe. And she's like, what? So then we're indebted to you. He's like, no, you will be free of the debt. This is a gift. This is a gift. We have plenty of money. Don't worry about it. And that way we'll just have the winter. And if by the end, you know, Sanae is not in love with me, y'all can leave and go back home. You know,
and I really like how Gavin does not want like to force her.
Yeah,
like, he wants her to be sure. Like, let's have right. this time.
He's like, I need
to
the time
to know each other.
I need the time. Yeah,
I want her to be sure. I'm not going to force her because Luvan's actually just worried that this is just kind of like puppy love. Like,
right.
she's pulled in by a pretty face, and he is as well. Like, she's like, I don't want you to get bored of her and then not want to marry her.
Right.
And he just like, you can stay a chaperone if you want.
Right.
And
yeah, that's
I'll
what she's like. Yeah, the only way that would happen is if I could stay here and be her.
And I kind of really love her protectiveness over her sister. We find out later that, okay, so her mother died giving birth to her, and she grew up, I think she was 5 years old when her father married mm-hmm. Abigail, which
yeah.
is Sanea's mother. And she was really lovely to her,
right.
like a really lovely stepmother. But she also died when Sanea was very young as well. So I think Luvan was 13 when she basically took over the running of the household.
Right.
And unfortunately, Abigail was the one who was very money savvy. So as soon as Abigail dies, the dad starts making really bad business
bad
decisions.
Bad
investments and stuff, and loses his fortune.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the house they live in is Luvan's. She had... You know, before, you know, she bought with her husband before she was widowed.
Yeah.
So they live in her house.
Let's talk about her husband really quick. I kind of really loved that, first of all, I don't love that she's a widow, but I like that she was married and she had a happy marriage.
Yes.
Like, her marriage with Thomas was like awesome.
It was wonderful.
And we find out later that he was actually an undertaker. So, like, he dealt with all the dead bodies and stuff. And that's.
And she
like,
would assist him.
Yeah, and she would assist him. So she's not squeamish. She's not easily, you know, like. Put on the back foot.
Yeah, she's seen like dead
shit.
Bodies at their worst,
she
like after disease
shit.
Or whatever has ravaged
exactly.
them. Yeah.
So, and I just really love it. I really love that she had a great first marriage mm-hmm. and there was lots of
she
love.
She also said he taught her to laugh.
Yes.
You know, like
he was a big, like his personality. She said
like big,
his personality didn't match his job description because like you would think of an undertaker as like, you know, this like very serious
and he's a big bear of a guy.
But he's like bearded. He's tall, like huge, like a bear. And he just like always was
he
love
to joke and laugh and always
yeah, and really
just very loving. Yeah,
I
know.
Like, oh, you don't normally get too many heroines who are widowed that had happy marriages.
I know. Like, it's usually like they were like, widowed from some horrible
yeah,
person.
Exactly.
And so, it's been 3 years. She's not been with anyone else, but she's still she's not in mourning, but she still feels that loyalty toward Thomas,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so then we've come to the part where Gavin's like, you know, she's like, well, I have to go pay that debt off. And so he gives her the money. She's going to go pay the debt. And he's like, and then I'll return and I'll speak to your lord about me staying for the winter. And
yes.
so then we flip and suddenly it's, you know, it's she's returning. And it's kind of Ballard's point of view at this point. And he's looking down and seeing her come through the bailing. We switch to Ballard's point of view. And he's like, well, you know, I'll meet the sister, you know, because he's been prepared. Ambrose, he doesn't even remember, like, clawing her. He knows that she was the one responsible for his broken nose and he's kind of like got a black bruising around his eyes from it.
I
like,
love the first time that she looks upon him because he,
yes.
for the sake of Sanea, because knows that Sanea is
yeah.
uncomfortable with, you know, like she flinched
he's very
as soon
scarred.
As she saw his hands, his like very like bony scarred hands with these long black claws.
Yeah.
And Sanea flinched from them. So, you know, to protect her, he's been going around the castle cloaked anytime he was in all of their presence.
Right.
But Luvan just kind of like, I want to see what's mm-hmm. behind the cloak. Like, are you going to face me type of thing? And so he's like, okay. So he like takes off the cloak and she doesn't even blink an eye. And she just like, my, those are some black eyes. And he just kind of like jokes back with her being like, yeah, my father also had black eyes or whatever. And he's like, ah, that attitude runs in the family. Because when she
yes.
kicked him in the nose, gave him some really good shiners.
So they have banter from the very first.
Very beginning. And he's very surprised that she just did not like run away screaming, basically.
Not only that, for the first time in forever, he is completely entranced by her body and the way she moves, and she's graceful and just and proud and just like everything about her. He's immediately attracted to her, and that's sort of that stunning to him too. He's like,
wait, air of like, you know, confidence and just kind of like, that's very attractive about her as well.
And she's very demanding. Like, he's like, you know, you can take off your cloak and gloves or whatever. And she's like, well, are you going to reveal yourself to me now, my lord? Basically, like, you know, payback, you know. And so it's just, he's like, wow, she's forward.
Yeah, she is.
And so he's immediately attracted to her and her personality and, you know, her slender body and all of those things. And so
the chaperoning begins.
The chaperoning begins, guys. poor Gavin.
They cannot get a moment alone.
Nothing.
Luvanne is just like, my sister will be as pure as the driven snow as long as I have breath in my body. Because we're not giving them any more alone time than they can. Like, she's even, like, sleeping in the room right next to her. And, like, she'll, like, stay up late just to
see. And she'll keep her door cracked open so she can see if there's any shadows.
Gavin, are crossing. You going to sneak in her room?
Yeah.
Because they are like lovesick little teenagers, you know?
Oh my God. There's one thing that happens in that first meeting I wanted to talk about that kind of shocked me too, was that when she basically said, you know, what can I do for you, my lord? Like, basically deciding what her job was going to be here. She can't just sit around all day. And he goes, you can warm my bed. And he's joking, but at the same time, he sees her considering it, like what she would do,
like,
to be here with her sister.
Time he's ever really felt like this since
and he's
Isabel's
like, woman,
death and
I'm
stuff.
Not, I'm kidding, you know, like.
Yeah, and so he was trying to get her hackles up, but he was also not quite joking.
Yes, he also was, like, he was having,
like,
feelings.
But also, if he would really want to. But she, like, let her hackles get up and then just kind of, she started thinking it over. And he goes, oh my God, you're actually considering this. And
I
she's
love
like,
that
well.
Moment.
And, like, this is a moment of realization, like, she's not running away scared from me. And also,
or my
she
abrasive,
just considered,
like,
sleeping with me? What? Yeah. What is happening here? Like, he's very surprised by this because, I mean, he doesn't really show it that often, but later on he'll make, like, a couple of comments just, like, he doesn't often show that his appearance bothers him, but it does. It does bother him.
But her mutual attraction shows up really quickly.
Very quickly. Like, she gravitates towards him. They all, like, after dinner, they go in the solar together to have, like, you
like
know,
reading
after
time
dinner,
or sewing
reading time,
or whatever.
Playing whatever. And she notices that Ballard doesn't join them. And also at the dinner table, he's not eating.
Right.
And so she's just kind of like,
why?
And
then she
realizes. She goes to the kitchens, and Magda, the
like
chef.
Like, late at night.
Yes, late at night, is serving him. And she realizes that it's hard to hold utensils with his claws. So he, like, basically uses his claws and a knife to eat.
Right.
And
he doesn't want to do that in front of people. Right. Especially
Sinia,
he's like, I don't want to scare my son's, you know, hopefully betrothed, you know, off with my beastly manners.
So the next night, she takes
it
upon herself.
I love this. This is a parallel to Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Like, where she helps him hold a fork, basically. I was like, this is so good. This is really clever.
I loved it. So,
you know?
She interrupts his mealtime the next night. And she's like, come with me. And Magda will keep your dish warm or whatever. So they go up to her room, and she gets the horse hoof clippers. Okay, to be able to clip his nails, and basically files them down. And he's just like, I could have done this or whatever. They'll grow back
in the
next flux.
Yeah, they're going to grow back as soon
as
the
flux comes.
She's like,
well, for the meantime, you know, you'll be able to.
And you can come and join us for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, actually,
like, she wants to pull him in to, like, so that he can be with them. And it's just kind of like, I love the way that she makes him feel welcome.
Right.
Like, this isn't even our house.
All right. She's trying to fix it.
She's trying to fucking
fix
it. And I love that moment with them because it's charged, you know, like, she's like holding his hand, and again, like I said, like, he's very self-conscious inwardly about it. Like,
she even has to touch his scars.
Yes. And so she, like, traces his face, and, like, the scars, like, she notices they kind of move too, like, one just moved in his scalp, and she's like, does that hurt? And he's like, I'm used to it, I don't feel it anymore.
Yeah.
So she's tracing the one that goes into his hairline, and she ends up with, like, both of her hands in his
in his hair. She's just,
like,
basically caressing him. And she doesn't even realize it. Like, she's
like,
becoming obsessed with him.
Yes.
And it, like, suddenly she realizes what she's done. He goes, I'm in hell. He's like, just like an agony.
Woman, I am in hell right now. I'm so hard.
He's so, like enraptured by her touch. Like, no one has touched him. And it just, like, oh, it's, it, I don't know. It was such, like, a both emotional and like hot scene.
It was just really beautiful. I think that Grace Draven, the way that she wrote their relationship, is just very beautiful. It's very like gradual, and the way that she just is so accepting of the way that he looks and just like is makes him feel attractive. Like he starts forgetting what he looks like
and
when
it comes to Luann. It also offers, because he's like, why are you not afraid of me? And she's like, look, my husband
was an undertaker.
And
let
so
me
she,
tell you some of the dead
seen
bodies.
Some disgusting things. She even talks about how the body exploded on her one time.
God, yes.
This is what she went home to Thomas, said, I'm never doing this again. And then went and vomited in the yard.
So, like apparently a family had waited a couple days to tell them that
the body died, exploded.
And the body just... gross.
Like, that's disgusting. Yeah.
I know it's actually happened before.
It's like
Isn't
gaseous.
That what they said happened to Elizabeth II?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that happened to Elizabeth II. Like,
yeah, the gases
Queen
will
Elizabeth.
Build up and will explode. Grody. Like, if, like, gross.
Yeah, so she was just kind of like that. I've seen more horrendous things, like people with their noses, like, slot off and stuff like that. Like, you're not even that gruesome at all.
Yeah.
Like, you're walking.
But she
the
does
park.
Talk a little bit about Thomas, you know, and opens up and
talks about her relationship and how they had a really good sex life. And I really love that. But she notices that he doesn't really talk about
Isabel.
His wife, except to say that it wasn't a love match.
It wasn't a love match. That's all he says. Yeah.
They don't really talk about her, and they definitely don't talk about, like, Isabel being the one who cursed them. Like, they're unaware about that. But yeah, so one day, Luann and Cynthia are out walking the grounds, and it's winter time. And
oh, we should also mention that because they've been having these little slight touches and stuff, he's basically like, will you be my, you know, mistress? You know, call him a leman or whatever. And she says, I'm not sure. I'm still debating. So they're like, basically he's in agony waiting for her to decide, because now he just wants her in his bed so badly.
Because they've had like some close calls.
Yes.
Where like they've almost like kissed each other, but they've always been interrupted or some sort of other. But they know that there is some heavy attraction going on between them.
Yes.
And so when Luann and Cynthia decide to go out walking on the grounds or whatever. And I believe that at the time he was like, was this a time whenever he went boar hunting or was that later?
I think he went.
Or maybe he was tending to the horses. I can't remember, but they were all outside and Cynthia comes running because Luann has fallen through the ice. They thought that the lake was frozen enough to be able to skate.
Yeah, they can hear her screaming because Gavin's, his horse, something went wrong with his horse.
Yeah.
It felt almost, I was scared that Isabel had something to do with it.
Yes, like it was,
you know,
kind of like her
enchanted.
Because we really didn't talk about the roses that are on the walls and stuff. There's literally these sentient roses that will attack him all the time,
especially when the flux is high. That's how they know
exactly.
And so they hiss every time Luann walks past, you know, just like she's like
sensing something's going on with her.
Yeah.
So anyway, Luann is literally about to die in this frozen
lake.
She's
kind of like half floating on her back. Her body is like in the ice,
trying not to let her cloak and stuff drag her down.
Yeah.
And Ballard is the one. He's like, I'm like, because Gavin was going to do it, but Ballard's like, I'm lighter. I should be the one to do it. And so he fishes her out, and like it was harrowing too, because Gavin even said, like, I thought I was about to lose you both, you know.
Yes.
And so Balor brings her back to the house, and they strip her off and they put her in a warm blanket and stuff and give her,
I love how he tells Magda, don't let anybody disturb us, I'm taking her, basically
takes
and she's like, what do you mean you're
room.
Taking her to bed? He's like, I would never take her unwillingly. He's like, I want some alone time,
like
with
I
her.
Want her conscious when we do something,
but it's his protectiveness. Like, and he wants to be the one to give her the care.
Yeah.
Like, this is where it's like, you can see, like, he wants to take care of her,
you
know, like, and so, yeah, so he strips her naked, strips himself naked, cocoons her in bed to give her the body heat and whatever, and they drift off
and
to sleep.
And he, like, kisses her head and stuff like that. Like, I love the little forehead kisses and stuff. And he just, like, he knows he could have lost her today.
Yes.
Like, it's very, like, emotional for him.
Yeah.
And then she wakes up from a nightmare, so she feels like
she's been buried,
like,
alive.
Buried alive. And she even wakes up and she's like, oh, we're not dead. And he's like, no, we're not dead. And she notices they're both naked.
Yeah.
She's like,
And so then her hands start wandering.
Like caressing and stuff. And I just really love it because, like, it's just, like, such an intimate moment because it doesn't, like, immediately turn sexual.
Yeah.
It's more just kind of like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe that happened.
I'm alive.
I'm alive type of thing. Thank you for saving me. And then it turns sexual because he starts, like, caressing her back. And she has wandering hands, too. And she basically is like, yeah, I'm pretty down to fuck.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, my God, I have not been with a woman in, like, so long. And he, like, goes down on her and brings her to pleasure. And I love how she's, like, so fucking loud. And he's like, who's the beast now? Like, it's you, like, screaming down the rafters in pleasure. And she's like, well, not going to apologize for that. And he's like, I would rather you know, scream your pleasure.
Basically be a wildcat. Quiet. Yeah,
like, timid. I love this. So they come together and he just kind of like, she's the one to bring up that this is not the last time that they will be doing it.
Yeah.
She wants more. And he's like, more?
He's like, oh, no. He's what? Like, yes, next time?
What?
Yes.
There's going to be a next time? And she's like, of course there will.
And
like,
a next time. And a next time.
Yes. And I also really love how Ambrose knocks on her door. And he's just like, I'm going to kill him. Because, like, he was ready to go for round two already.
Yeah.
And so he gets up, like, all naked. And then she pops out of bed, wraps the sheet around her. And she's like, wait, I have to see his face when you open the door
because he thinks she's alone.
So they open the door because he's bringing her, like, this tonic to give her back her strength and stuff like that. And, like, so Balor's just standing there naked and Ambrose is just, like, looking at them like, what the fuck? And I love it because, like, there's so much banter. He's, like, basically just, like, insulting her. Balor has to hold her back from, like, basically clawing his eyes out. And then he offers her the tonic and she's just like, poison. Oh, it smells terrible. And he's like, oh, poisons are actually sweet. So just watch out. And she drinks it, almost throws up, and Ambrose is literally cackling in the background, loves her discomfort.
Yes.
But it actually does work. She's like, okay, I feel it working. Like,
okay, it actually works. It's like, if you can hold it down, it will help you.
Yes, exactly. If you can hold it down. The hardest part is not bringing it back up.
Yeah, she considers vomiting on his shoes, but then she's like, holds it down. Then she goes and brushes her teeth with Rosemary, because of course Ambrose is like, I recommend that you do not kiss her, you know. And Ballard's like, screw that, you know. Like, we just got it on, we're not gonna stop now.
So I love it. But it's close to the morning and she's like, Senia wakes up pretty early and you gotta get out because
Senia hasn't even seen her since she was almost drowned, you know?
And so she's gonna be worried about her. So she keeps trying to get Balor out the room and he wants, like, morning kisses and stuff like that. It's just so sweet. God, I just love their relationship. It's so adorable.
Yeah.
And she has to, like, basically send Senia on, like, an errand, like, hey, go get your hairbrush because yours is better than mine.
Can you also get your with water as well because I'm out? And
yes. Yeah. Like, she's trying to get Balor to be able to sneak out and stuff. And the reason why, because Balor's just kind of like, well, but why? You're a widow. Like, it's not, you're allowed to have a lover.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, but I'm trying to keep these two crazy kids from getting in each other's pants. And I would be seen as a hypocrite.
Right.
If I was seen, like, jumping into bed with you, like, she would be kind of like, oh, well,
yeah, you can do it, like, but I can't.
Yeah. Like, what the hell? Like, why rules don't apply to you?
And of course, this is, like, old school rules, though, because she's still a virgin. She's still unmarried. It's different for a widow. Like, a widow, her basically assets are no longer her virginity and her virtue, but her lands and her property. You know what I mean? And so, like, it's different, you know? Same with, like, historical romance. So exactly. I think it's...
Fantasy always has that historical
right.
element.
And she wants to be sure, she's like, you know, her one thing that she can contribute besides her intelligence or whatever, but to the wide world, it is her beauty and her virtue, right?
Levayan is just protecting it just in case this falls through.
Right. Cabin. She's like, you know...
She's like, what if we have to return
to
the
village? And she doubts. Yeah. And she also is... not doubts, but she is a little doubtful that he's never offered for you. And she's very a stickler about that. He hasn't offered for you yet. And until he does, this is not a betrothal. You can't sleep with him. You know what I mean? Like, it can't be that way. So
there's one moment when they're all sitting in the solar and, like, Gavin was, like, sharpening his knife and Linnea was just, like, humming and he gravitates toward her and puts his head in her lap. And, like, she's like, you can't sleep in my sister's lap. And they're like, oh my God, you embarrassed us. And
I know.
Like,
Linnea runs out. She's so mad.
So I love it because, like, Balor's also just kind of like, look, you gotta, like you can't ease be up on them so much. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And she even, like, tells Senea, she's just like, if you have some patience with me, you know, I'll try not to be so embarrassing.
We also learn that Balor realizes she's like a mother figure. Mm-hmm. And so she has to cut her own apron strings. It's like letting your child go.
Yeah. And she also kind of mothered her father as well. Like she's literally been in charge since she was 13. So it's kind of like a hard thing to stop doing.
Right.
Looking out for her family because they haven't been able to fend for themselves.
Right. They haven't.
This is the first time Saneha has ever showed any like true backbone, like in defiance.
Yeah.
In leaving with Gavin.
Because she loves him. She's in love with him now.
And I love like in the beginning, before she runs off in the beginning, she tells LaVanne, she's kind of hurt because LaVanne just kind of like, no, this is a terrible idea and you're not
thinking straight. You don't
even
know him.
And Saneha just kind of like, why don't you trust me that I have good ideas as well? Like,
right,
I'm not
but I know
just
what
jumping
I'm doing.
Into this. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not just not thinking, you know, and she kind of feels really hurt that LaVanne doesn't, you know, recognize that in her. But I like that, you know, this is a moment where she has to kind of like let, you know, her little baby bird fly type of thing. So she's kind of learning to not be so overbearing, but it's hard for her. It's hard for her. But I like that. I like that little flaw of hers. You know, it's an understandable flaw. And it creates, you know, some good comedic moments as well.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And it also some growth moments between the sisters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So after they start sleeping together, well, then she immediately, like, gets her period. And I love how she tells Balor. She's just like, look, I'm going to be such an asshole when this is happening. And, like, he's
just
so hard up because he wants her so badly.
They have a nice scene in the buttery, though.
Oh, she's man. Coming. She's going to get some ale. And he,
and
like,
he goes down to
oh, God. And he assist. Goes – because he cannot help but just gravitate towards her. And he hasn't had her in his bed for 3 days, and he's just kind of like, I just wish that she would come in to sleep with me. Like, he
just
wants her
to sleep beside her.
Him.
He's falling in love with her.
Yes, so. He just wants her to fall asleep with. And so after it's done, she does end up by coming into his bed. Mm-hmm. And I love how she's just like, oh my God, it's ice cold in here, because he doesn't feel like the temperatures like everybody else.
Yeah.
And they start sleeping together, and one night.
I love how she thinks it's so she wakes with something slithering in the bed and she thinks it's a snake.
Well, she had told him before they fell asleep. Well, he had fallen asleep.
Oh, he had just fallen asleep.
She loved him, but she knows that she has to return because her dad can't be alone by himself.
Right.
Just cannot. Like, he cannot fend for himself. She's like, my place is over there. So, like, once they're actually married, I will be returning and stuff. And he even kind of made a mention when they were like walking the grounds, because he was talking about like in the springtime there's these flowers that bloom, and she's like, oh, I wish I could see
I
that
wish I
and
could
he,
see
and
that
he is like, well, you,
well,
can
you could stay
you stay, and she's just like, I can't, he's can't. Like, I know, and it's just so sad because
so
it's
sad.
Like,
but he's also like unwilling to fight for her because he doesn't want her to be with him as a cursed man.
Yes.
You know, he's like, she needs to go and have a real life and not stay here with me, you know, because Lord knows how much longer I'll even be alive with this curse, you know.
Exactly.
Because they can sort of feel like it's – and it does intensify. As soon as she says she loves him, it brings on the
curse. She felt like a wave of magic and stuff. Like, she felt like something changed, like something was happening. It's and then all of a sudden it settled, and then she falls asleep. And that's
and
when the roses come. She thinks they're snakes, like Juliet said.
I was so afraid. I was like, girl, I would be freaking out
I'd
too.
I'd be freaking out too. And like, Balor's just kind of like, stay fucking still so I can do this. And like, she's like freaking out about it.
Yeah.
And the covers really protected her a lot. But when they finally get free from the vines, like, she notices how many, you know, wounds that Balor
has. Like, hundreds of thorns.
And she's like, oh my God, like, why are you worried about me? Look at you. And she's like, I'm used to this happening. Like, these stupid roses. And so then we kind of find out that it was Isabeau's curse. Like, she finally
out. She starts to find out more about the actual curse than what.
There's
what
also that moment that happens when they have like basically like their Christmas Yuletide kind of ceremony,
like Christmas,
and they honor their mothers. Okay, so and they put like some their blood
on
the
log,
and this is when they find out that LaVanne is a non-born.
Yes, because Ambrose freaks out. He goes, right, because she was
she's
cut out of
her
mother.
And she says, you know, who, God, what does she say? She basically says that she's a non-born or whatever.
Yeah.
And her mom died giving birth to her and basically had cesarean. to have a cesarean to save the baby. And that's when Ambrose was just kind of like, oh shit, maybe that's the other piece of the curse, like, that we're missing. Like, Zendaya loves Gavin. Like, we know that Zendaya loves
woman
Gavin.
Born would love you. And like, she does love him.
Yes, and she does love
him. And she even tells Ambrose, I told him that night I loved him. And she's like, oh, that's what has brought
it's
on the flux.
It's triggering. And then, like, later on in the day, we find out that Gavin suddenly turns into his beastly form and they're trying to get him to calm the fuck down.
And he's never been in the beastly form.
He's never been
since he was
a child. And we find, and they ask Zendaya, like, did you tell him that you loved him? She's like, yes. And they're like, don't, whatever you do, tell him again. Don't do it again because this is crazy. And, like, Gavin almost attacks Levain.
Yeah.
Thankfully she was unharmed after that. But, like, they're just like, okay, what the fuck do we have to do to break this curse? Like, literally, it's just kind of like, what else can we possibly do? So after Gavin, has that, you know, scary situation.
Zendaya's
where decide,
they
beast.
Decide to get married.
And he's like, okay, let's get married. Let's, like, Zendaya's the one that says, we are getting married.
Right.
Like,
maybe that will break the curse. Because I love you, you love me. Of course, she doesn't say the words, but yes.
So they quickly have their wedding ceremony.
Oh, and then we have the Enchanted Mirror, which is also from the Disney version.
Yes.
Where you can see your loved ones. That was one of the gifts from the Christmas event. Mm-hmm. And so Zendaya's like, I want to see Father. I know he couldn't be here, but I want to see him for the wedding. So, of course, when she goes up to get the mirror, we suddenly hear her scream. Everybody comes running. He's in jail. Yeah. So apparently they know. Jiminin has put him in jail, has found some way to imprison him to bring us back to pay more debt.
Right. Exactly. So she just kind of like, I can't believe this asshole has thrown my father in jail. Like, I will go take care of this.
Right.
And so Balor gives
And Balor can't leave. Yeah. That's the other thing. He cannot leave the castle. And he hates that she has to go face this, you know, criminal by herself. But he can't do anything else.
And he also just kind of, like, he hopes that she doesn't return because he's just, like, he knows that it's not going to work. Like, she also has been saying that she can't stay there forever. So he's just kind of, like, I hope that she doesn't return after this because it's just going to make it that much harder.
Yes, we have a really sad goodbye moment.
Like, a little goodbye moment in where he just kind of, like, remember me.
Oh!
I'm like, oh, God.
And he puts her on the horse. And slaps the horse, and she's like, and she's like, almost like shaken because she wasn't ready to go.
Yeah,
you know, looking
and
over
he
her
just
shoulder
like stays
at him.
Even after he can't see her anymore. And Ambrose is kind of like, you want to come in? And he's just like, no.
And
like,
he Ambrose also gave her another mirror, but instead Balard wouldn't let him see anybody he wants, only her sister.
Yeah,
because Balard didn't want her seeing him.
That's it.
You know,
that's
in his agony and all of that. He's like, I don't want her to see me like that. I don't want that.
And he started to change as well. Like, after that flux that just happened, he started,
his,
like,
his beastly form started morphing into
something.
He started
kind of turning into, like, a tree.
Yes.
Like, he started having, like, bark on his hands and, like, these, like, horns, like, bark horns popping out.
I like the
stuff.
Symbolism of it because they kind of talked about, you know, like, the lands he coveted so well. He became that, you know, a beast.
Exactly. So she returns home, like, very quickly, okay? And she goes to the Gowlers and she's like, let's settle whatever made
up
debt.
I love how she handles these assholes,
too. She's kind of like, what made up debt are we talking about now? And they're like, well, like, you did settle the original debt,
but then there's this one.
Then there's this, like, one, and she's like, this is not my father's signature. It's a forgery. And they're like, it's too close to the original signature. Like, it had, and she's like,
basically,
do you think
they're
my
all
father
paid
would
by
be
Jiminin.
Stupid enough to import ice in the middle of summer? What the fuck are you? What? What are you talking about? Why would he have done that last year?
Yeah.
And why is it suddenly cropping up now? Why was it? Oh, well, he was just, like, out of respect. Like, he didn't want to saddle
you
with another one.
Too
many debts. And she's like, this is bullshit. Well, like, here we go. We're paying. And they're like, oh, my God. How are you paying for this? Like, they did not expect for her to be able to pay for it.
Yeah, because, of course, the same deal still stands. Like, well, Jiminin will also forgive this debt again if you give your sister to him in marriage. And she's like, well, you know what? Too fucking bad, because she's already married. Okay. And so, of course, they're all kind of shocked. But when she goes to get her father, this is the sad thing. He's like, I wish you hadn't come. I wish you mm-hmm. hadn't come. And she doesn't quite understand it. But when they get her home and Niev, the neighbor woman, who's also basically his mistress.
Loving on the father.
comes by. They're all talking. And she finds out that basically Jiminen was furious that she has it out for her, like to do her harm.
Yeah. Because,
you know, because she embarrassed him in front of the whole town.
Exactly.
Last time.
Before she is able to take her father back home, he actually like rushes there because he didn't expect her to like be there so quickly. They actually thought that her father was gonna die in jail. Like that's what they expected.
That's what they're hoping.
It would take her like a week to get there. So.
Yeah.
And she showed up a day after her father was shown up in jail. So he is rushing there because it's not going to plan. And she ends up by taking the reins of her horse and slapping him across the fucking face.
And
embarrasses him some more. Like,
I was nervous. I was like, girl.
I was like, maybe you shouldn't have done that last one. I mean,
I know.
Maybe LeVan. And your temper should have been reined in for that one because nothing good can come of that.
So, of course, in the middle of the night, she is awoken with a hand over her mouth and has to fight off this cretin, stumbles downstairs in this fight with him. She also still has this dagger that Ballard had given her as one of her gifts. It's like this jeweled dagger from mm-hmm. a warrior priestess or something. And so she's carrying that with her, and she falls down the stairs and sees her father in the parlor with Jiminen and like 20 men or something in her parlor. And so she's like, oh my God.
Apparently, you know? He overheard the dad talking to Niev when she was going back to her house. And the father apparently like talked about the enchanted mirror where they could see Senea. And so Jiminen was like, I want to see her. And like, earlier, when she was showing her father, Senea, she was able to see, like, Gavin and Senea just, like, sitting with each other. And
it was very
peaceful. Like, it's so beautiful.
But now it's late at night.
Now it's late at night, and they're calling up on Senea, and Jiminen is just kind of like, oh, that's one to, like, basically jerk off to and stuff. And she's so pissed off, like, her sister's privacy is violated like this. And he's just like, I want you to take me to where she is. And so, like, he, like, knocks her out at first and, like,
He beats her. Yeah, he beats her up.
Yeah, yeah.
Punches her in the face. He's like really brutal to her.
Yeah, and he wants to know how the fuck you get to this damn castle.
Like, well, we have to follow. So they have the mirror. And what I love is like after the second day, they've been traveling, or after the first day, I can't remember exactly when, but they go to look at the mirror again, and it's all shadow and smoke. And so she knows Ambrose has basically washed away.
Shadowed them.
Yeah, has shadowed the whole enchantment on the mirror. And Jiminen is furious, but it's still leading them to Kadok Tor.
Yes.
The castle. So they get there, and everything feels deserted. Like, the gateway is open. Everything's quiet. Everything's like, feels like no one is there. And so she's afraid. She's like, oh my God, has he already died? Because they know that the curse is so bad that it's going to kill them soon. And that's what she's been fearing. And as soon as they make it into the bailey, the door opens and out comes Senea. But she realizes it's not her. It's Ambrose, because she has magic blood.
And she can see him past the
hallucination.
Yeah.
And so, but of course she's like, of course I'll go with you. Just free my father or whatever. And like he dumps her off his horse because Jiminen was forcing Louvain to ride with him. But as soon as Ambrose gets close, he basically gives her a look like, get ready. But then a beast comes barreling out the door. It's Gavin in full beast form. And he just starts ravaging everyone. So it's complete mayhem. And then there's another beast comes flying out the door.
Ambrose
has let loose both of them out of their cages, you know, and Magda and the other women are hiding in the basement while Ambrose handles this, and they kill all the men. The dad is the one who uses her dagger and kills Jiminen, thank God. But now we have two beasts
facing off,
right?
And this is, like Juliet said, the final part of the curse is that the son cannot, you know,
kill his
slay
father.
The father. Like, that's the – if Gavin can hold off and not slay the father, because, like, this is the problem. In their beast form, it's hard for them to recognize them. They're very animalistic.
And Sinea's run out as well.
Yes.
And she's like, trying to talk Gavin down.
Be like, Gavin, remember who you are. You know, Gavin, you're Gavin,
you
know, DeLovett.
You're my husband.
Yes,
I love you. Remember.
Come back to me and stuff like that. And she is able to call him back because suddenly his eyes turn from that gold purple back to green. And then he recognizes his father and he says, like, my father.
You know? Then he turns it back to human form.
And then there's like that wave of magic that she had felt originally when she had declared her love for Ballard. So you feel like that curse, like, breaking. So after Gavin comes back to himself and changes back into human form, because the curse is now broken and that final part has been fulfilled. But the problem is Ballard, like they said, that he has been in the curse's thrall too long.
He was a beast too long.
He took it on upon himself too long. So he's still in beast form and he still doesn't recognize anybody.
He can't shift.
He cannot shift. And like she has her pistol. And Ambrose is the one, he's just like, it's too late. Like, it's just.
You have to shoot him, put him out of his misery.
Yeah, put him out of his misery, just shoot him. And Luvian ends up by shooting Ballard. And she thinks, like, she's just like, I killed him. But Ambrose is like, hurry up, come over here. And they see that Ballard has changed back into a human. So I guess, like, the gunshot just, like, was the final, like, recall back to reality. Yeah. Like, snapped him out of it. So he's not dead.
I love how Ambrose is injured. Like, good thing you're a horrible shot. Yes. You know? But she's like, I was half blind from the snow. I've been beaten half to death. Come on, man. Like, give me a break.
Exactly. So finally that curse is finally broken.
I love how they talk about they're going to burn the rose bushes, the ashes of it. They're sweeping them all up.
Fuck those roses, geez. I know. I mean, that was that's such a sinister part of this book. That
it really is. It gets you angry because there's nothing you can do to stop them.
Isabeau's, like, her influence is still there.
It's like our familiar or something, are these roses.
Crazy fucking kissing roses. I mean, ugh. Gross. So
we have our happily ever after. And I love how Sinéa is the one who takes control. And she's like, this is what's going to happen. Gavin and I are going to move back home with father. You're going to stay here. You know, basically, you don't need to take care of me anymore. Mm-hmm. You don't need to take care of dad anymore. I'm going to watch over him. And you're going to have your own life for a while. And so she marries Ballard. And then we have this beautiful epilogue.
Beautiful epilogue.
3 years later, where he's holding his little dark-haired son. And it's got the little birthmark on the back. And he's like, I won't even mention that to her because she'll basically throttle me for even thinking that that wasn't, you know, like my child. You know,
not
for
that
even
I was checking because I was unsure, but, you know.
He just wanted to see that,
to
like,
see it.
Yeah, the literal birthmark of their ancestry, you know.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And so we just have a really lovely epilogue. Ambrose is still there and he declares the child Thomas. You know, and so it's beautiful.
It's a beautiful little full circle type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, just one of my favorite parts of this as well is, like, that the way that the father takes on the curse for the son. Like, yes. I don't know. It was just, like, a very different
take on that.
Like, and he wasn't even his blood son.
Right.
Like, he still did that because he still loved him so
much.
But
see, that's when I immediately fell in love with Ballard. Was when he declared this son his own, who he knew was not his son. He was not his son by blood. And so he wasn't like this heartless, you know, fiend that Isabeau made him out to be. Yes, he was being ruthless about the land and he's paid for it dearly. And he also talked, I kind of love, honestly, how he was once more of a beastly man when he was a warrior. And then when he started transforming into having all these scars like a beast, he was actually less so. You know, he was actually becoming more humane you know, over time, which I just thought was really kind of cool to watch. You know?
I agree. So, I really love this book.
It is. It was great.
So, Juliet, tell me what your showdown scene is.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I think I'm just going to say their first sex scene after he saves her from the...
I was going to pick that too, but okay.
After he saves her, like that near-death experience. I love those moments of like the near-death experience and he realizes his feelings and he's so protective.
Everything's in perspective now. Yes. You know? And how she's been like holding him off now.
Right.
Like,
they've both been sort of like playing these little games. And now when it comes to like, oh, reality, I could have lost her tonight. And why are we wasting time? And she's mine to protect. I need to take care of her, you know? And so, and then they're just like snuggled in the bed and wakes up and they realize this is ridiculous. Let's get it on. And then they have this really beautiful sex scene.
It is really beautiful. And it's also very just like emotional too, because like Ballard hasn't been with anybody since,
right.
since Isabeau.
And she hasn't been anyone since with, Thomas.
Since her husband for 3 years. So, I mean, it was just like, they're both waiting for the right
and
person.
And opening up.
And
right.
it was yeah. really lovely. Like, you know that this means something to them.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. I just really loved it. I love their relationship, and I love how she was so accepting.
Me too.
Of him. Like, never cowered away from him. And it was just
her
beautiful.
Little firecracker self.
She is a firecracker. All right, guys. Well, we hope that you enjoyed today's episode. We look forward to the next one, where we'll be reviewing A Wicked Kind of Husband. Thanks so much for listening.
This goes out to all the fangirls.
Life's better with little HEA.